It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
California, we have a problem. Here's the California legislature. Has enacted a number of laws designed to intentionally obstruct the work of our sworn immigration officers. So that's why the department filed a suit against the state of California to invalidate these unjust laws and to immediately freeze their effect. For example, the mayor of Oakland has been actively seeking to help illegal aliens avoid apprehension by ICE. So here's my message to Mayor Schaaf. How dare you? How dare you needlessly endanger the lives of our law enforcement officers to promote a radical open borders agenda? I fundamentally believe at my core that we should not further endanger the lives of those who risk everything for us because some officials want to violate the law in promoting an agenda that the American people reject.
That was Attorney General Jeff Sessions at the California Peace Officers Association luncheon yesterday in Sacramento. I told you yesterday morning on the show that he was going to have that meeting, make that speech. We talked about the California law that provoked that visit by the Attorney General. And so I want to talk about that a little bit at the top of the show today. Sandy Rios with you, by the way, on this Thursday. Thanks for joining me. I want to fill in a few more of the blanks. You know, he actually directed his words very pointedly to Mayor Libby Schaaf. Remember, Mayor Schaaf, at least some of his words, is from Oakland, California, and she actually sent out an alert to the community that ICE officers were going to be looking for illegal immigrants the next morning. And the estimate is that at least 800 wanted criminals were not apprehended because of what she did. And by the way, the Justice Department is looking into whether Mayor Libby Schaaf, obstructed justice by warning residents of an impending raid. And people that I know in law enforcement say she absolutely did. So that's part of their inquiry. Plus, the Attorney General laid down some really strong markers against them. In fact, let me go back and read some of his words. I actually thought about playing his whole speech, but I'm not going to. You remember, some of you have been listening for a while may recall that I often played then-Senator Sessions' speeches in the Senate on this whole business of illegal immigration and the out-of-control legal immigration that we've adopted into this country. I think it's 1 million a year we allow in with no restrictions. Let's just say there are some restrictions, so that would not be true. But very few restrictions. Just it's gotten out of control, no question about it. And Senator Sessions really led a one-man battle in the Senate to stop it because, as you can see, his Republican counterparts just don't feel the same way. They're eager to bring in more workers for big business. And so honestly, Senator Sessions was a champion then, and now this is what he's doing as Attorney General. So let me... He warned them there will be no secession. And he actually referred them back to the times that he said, there is no nullification. There is no secession. Federal law is the supreme law of the land. I would invite any doubters to go to Gettysburg or to the tombstone of John C. Calhoun and Abraham Lincoln. He said, of course, he's addressing law officers. And he said, he noted worrisome trends as violent crimes increased in 2014 and 2015, particularly a surge in homicide and drug availability. He said that a lawful immigration system was part of tackling such trends. And he said that while America admits the highest number of legal immigrants in the world, the American people deserve a legal, rational immigration system that protects the nation and preserves the national interest. And then he said, it cannot be the policy of a great nation to reward those who unlawfully enter its country with legal status, Social Security, welfare, food stamps, and work permits, and so forth. How can this be sound policy? Meanwhile, those who engage in this process lawfully and patiently and wait their turn are discriminated against at every turn. And then he said to California that the open borders policy that refuses to apprehend and deport illegal immigrants is radical, irrational, and an irrational idea that cannot be accepted. And he rejected the right of states to obstruct federal immigration law. He cited the statutes, the federal, according to the Constitution, it is the federal government that oversees immigration, lawful and unlawful, has authority to oversee that. So the response, of course, of the Democrats is predictable. And I want you to hear a little bit of it. This is clip four. This is the mayor, the governor, Jerry Brown of California, and then Kamala Harris. Let's listen.
This is really unprecedented for the chief law enforcement of the United States to come out to California and act more like Fox News than a law enforcement officer. This is a political stunt. It's not about the truth. It's not about protecting our state. It's about dividing America.
I think Jerry Brown is absolutely right. This administration and Jeff Sessions in particular have clearly put a target on the back of California, and California's going to fight. They're playing politics, and they're playing politics with California. This attorney general is doing that, and he's going to lose.
You know what that strikes me is that it reminds me of kids. Like, if your kids lie to you, stay out past their curfew, disobey you in some way, and you punish them. Are you putting a target on their back? I guess according to this logic, you are. If they disobey and you bring justice to your children or you reestablish the law in your house, you're putting a target on your kid's back. How dare you do that? So that's the logic of California, and you can see that's why California is in so much trouble. But the problem is it doesn't end at California's borders. The people, illegal immigrant criminals, are crossing the borders and will do their crime elsewhere. And it's not just the crime, it's the cost, the incredible cost to the nation. And I want to turn my conversation to a hearing that took place. John Koskinen, the IRS, whoever could figure out why he's still the head of the IRS, it is beyond many of us. Actually, I kind of know the answer. It's not a good one. But he's still in place. So this is what happened in the hearing, and this just happened, I think, this week. The top dog at the IRS, I'm reading an article I will read in part by Robert Wood. He says, we have the top dog at the IRS, the IRS commissioner himself, admitting that, well, there's a problem with illegal immigrants and taxes. In fact, the top IRS official this time wasn't talking about how the IRS wipes some hard drives or can't find emails. He wasn't even asking for a bigger budget to give bonuses to IRS employees. No, this time he was talking about illegal immigrants and about the IRS turning a blind eye. Or maybe worse, the IRS actually wants illegal immigrants to illegally use Social Security numbers, he suggested. IRS Commissioner John Koskinen made this surprising statement in response to a question from Senator Dan Coats of Indiana at a Senate Finance Committee meeting. Actually, you know what? I'm realizing this is not a new article, because when it said Dan Coats, I realized this is not current. Dan is serving in the administration. This was an article from April of 2016. So it was a year ago before the taxes were due, right around the same time. So this is a hearing that took place prior to that. So what we learned in that hearing is that the IRS continues to process tax returns with false W-2 information and issue refunds as if they were routine tax returns and say that that's not really our job. We also learned that the IRS ignores notifications from the Social Security Administration that a name does not match a Social Security number and you use your own system to determine whether a number is valid. Commissioner Koskinen was asked to explain this, and he suggested, well, that as long as the information is being used only to fraudulently obtain jobs, the IRS was okay with it. In fact, he said that the IRS actually had an interest in helping the illegal immigrants to crook these rules. In fairness, perhaps it's just that that's not my department response that abounds in big government. You'll love this next part. The IRS chief tried to distinguish between the various bad uses and misuses of someone else's personal data. It is at least vaguely reminiscent of the flap a year ago that differentiated President Obama and Donald Trump over immigration and taxes. Mr. Trump said illegal immigrants get $4.2 billion in tax credits. A 2011 audit by the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration confirmed that individuals who are not authorized to work in the United States were paid $4.2 billion in refundable credits. All right, so stay with me because this is important enough for me to finish reading at least part of this article. This is, again, an article by Robert Wood written in April of 2016. Of course, undocumented immigrants cannot legitimately get Social Security numbers, but it seems the IRS doesn't care. Besides, they can file taxes with an individual taxpayer identification number. They're not supposed to get the earned income tax credit, but they can receive the additional child tax credit. The recipe goes like this. First, get a Social Security number, then claim the earned income tax credit for the last 3 years, and then wait for the IRS to send you 3 years of tax refunds. The gambit could apparently work even if you never paid taxes, never filed a return, and worked off the books. And the IRS says this is the way the earned income tax credit works. Illegal immigrants covered by the president's amnesty deal also can claim back tax credits for work they performed illegally, even if they never filed a tax return during those years. So illegals can get back taxes that they never paid. The IRS chief later corrected himself and said that they can claim the money even if they never filed tax returns in the past. According to the IRS, illegal immigrants granted amnesty and Social Security numbers can claim up to 3 years of back tax credits. So this, I'm just giving you that illustration to once again drive home the drain on our economy. This just cannot be. I'm with Senator Sessions. I have been for a long time on this issue. I'm totally in support of the information that he has pumped into the bloodstream of this country. And now that he's Attorney General, he has a chance to actually do something about it. Well, the Attorney General was very busy yesterday. Because there's more news out of justice, and I want to take time to tell you about it. You probably saw Kent Terry, you may have, the brother of Brian Terry, who was the Border Patrol agent, who was killed by a gun that Eric Holder's Justice Department allowed to be distributed to the Mexican drug cartels and other places. Let me explain. It was called Fast and Furious, and what happened was ATF agents repeatedly and knowingly allowed individuals working for Mexican cartels to traffic thousands of AK-47s, 50 caliber rifles, and handguns into Mexico. The operation ended in 2010 when Agent Terry was murdered, and we think by one of those guns, and years of cover-ups surrounding his death and the extent of the operation ensued. Hundreds, if not thousands, of Mexican citizens have been murdered as a result of the U.S. government putting guns into the hands of narco-terrorists, and a number of firearms trafficked during the operation have been found in additional crime scenes in the United States. Why am I talking about this today? Because it's been how many years? And by the way, the Attorney General Eric Holder was held in contempt over this issue by the Congress. Of course, it didn't embarrass him. He didn't care. The left doesn't care. Just like we were watching this Scandalous with the Clintons on Fox. Have you been watching that? They have no shame. They should be so ashamed. They should resign in disgrace. But no. They just have to make it through, muddle through, take all the hits and live to lie and deceive another day. That was Eric Holder. So he would not release the documents on this. And there were court proceedings going on. But now the Justice Department has announced that the Fast and Furious documents withheld by Eric Holder will, in fact, be released. And Kent Terry, the brother of Brian, is very relieved, and I know other people will be too. I have more to say about what Attorney General Sessions and the Justice Department did yesterday because there's more to report. It's very important stuff. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Thank you. Hey, I'm Brant. Maybe you've heard me talking about MediShare, but now I give you my friend Sherry.
Yes, I have loved MediShare. Loved it.
Is that all you have to say? Because this will be a really short
announcement. No, I really do love it. I've saved hundreds a month. And overall, I just think it's a better choice of a healthcare program for me. I'm really happy with it. And honestly, normally, I don't even like talking about this stuff.
Nobody does.
But MediShare is different. MediShare members share each other's healthcare bills. We pray for each other. It's a not-for-profit, so we all save money.
True. Tell them about the thing.
What thing?
The online thing.
Oh, yeah, I used that the other night. MediShare members can now access a doctor online 24/7. You can get a prescription for the flu or something just that fast.
So MediShare can save you hundreds a month. You get to be part of the community. You get a huge network of doctors and providers to choose from.
It's all pretty awesome.
It's all pretty awesome.
It's all pretty awesome.
The final verdict from Jerry. So call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
You shall not murder. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. This is the sixth commandment of the Ten Commandments. You shall not murder. We are asking schools all over America to put this on their marquees, put this on their signs out in front of their school for 1 week to remind America's students that innocent life is precious. Help us spread the word about this campaign to your friends and family. Please go to our website, afa.net, afa.net, and sign our open letter to America's schools. We need to proclaim this message, you shall not murder, across the land. Why? Because gun control alone will not solve matters of the heart. We need our young people to understand that murder is a violation of God's law, and also it's a violation of the laws all across this land. So help us. Go to afa.net and spread the word.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Parents at a Texas middle school are wondering what gay bars and transsexuals have to do with Black History Month. Sixth graders at North Richland Middle School were presented a survey asking if they were comfortable going to a gay bar or if they would be okay if their sister's new boyfriend is a female-to-male transsexual. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram reports the survey was part of the diversity curriculum for Black History Month. A parent complained after her 12-year-old showed her a copy of the survey, 41 questions. How do you feel about having a Muslim roommate? How would you feel if your dentist is HIV positive? The irate mom said it was just not appropriate for kids, and the school district agreed. They said the survey was not appropriate and the teacher was disciplined. The lesson here for moms and dads, pay close attention to what your child is learning in school. And if you see something, say something. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
How dare you needlessly endanger the lives of our law enforcement officers to promote a radical open borders agenda.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions threw down the gauntlet in California, blasting state politicians for their sanctuary policies and accusing them of deliberately obstructing federal immigration law by protecting illegal immigrants.
California absolutely appears to me is using every power it has, powers it doesn't have, to frustrate federal law enforcement.
President Trump showed his support while speaking to the Latino Coalition earlier today.
And it's destroying people's lives, so many, and we're going to stop it.
The Justice Department is specifically targeting three California state laws enacted within the past year. One prohibits law enforcement from asking people about their immigration status and from participating in federal enforcement raids. Another gives state officials power over DHS detention facilities, and the third offers protection against workplace raids. This lawsuit marks an escalation in the ongoing feud between the Trump administration and immigration advocates, hundreds of whom showed up to protest, chanting, shut it down and blocking the street around the hotel where Sessions delivered his remarks. California's Democratic governor and attorney general angrily condemned the DOJ lawsuit as a political stunt, contending their state's sanctuary policies are on solid legal ground.
This is completely unprecedented for the chief law enforcement of the United States to come out here and engage in a political stunt, make wild accusations, many of which are based on outright lies.
The lawsuit challenges some of our state laws, which are, again, fully constitutional.
In an exclusive interview with Fox News' Shannon Bream, Sessions vowed to keep fighting.
Somebody needs to stand up and say, no, you've gone too far. You cannot do this. This is not reasonable. It's radical, really.
All right. I wanted you to hear that to kind of restate the basics of what was happening in California, in case I didn't explain it thoroughly in the first segment, because I did talk about it yesterday. That was Claudia Cowan of Fox News. So Senator Sessions, no, Attorney General Sessions was on with Shannon Bream last night, and there were lots of other things that came out yesterday. Now, you know that the Attorney General has been under fire from President Trump on several different occasions. The accusation that he's not doing anything, I hear lots of people saying that, and I keep saying, yes, he is. You just don't know. He's just not publicizing it. He feels he can't. And there are other things going on there that people don't know about. So personally, I was very happy to see him come out swinging yesterday and sort of lay some markers down. And not only on Fast and Furious, but also calling out California and challenging them directly, challenging the mayor of Oakland. We'll see what happens with that. But that's not all that happened yesterday with Attorney General Sessions. He told Shannon Bream last night, and something that I actually heard in meetings yesterday, too, that he will consider naming a special counsel to probe the FBI and Justice Department investigations into possible collusion. But here's the thing. Now, you know that Chairman Gowdy and Chairman Goodlatte are asking for this. We mentioned it yesterday, and you've probably seen this. Here's the thing to consider. If a special counsel is appointed, it will take years for all of this stuff to be revealed, and they will operate in secrecy. Unlike Mueller, who I think somehow leaks keep coming out of his investigation, honorable men don't leak, you know, what they're investigating, because it is against the law, grand juries and all of that. So the thing would probably go silent now. And remember that Ken Starr's investigation into the Clintons went on for 7 years. All right, so that's possible. We may be, you know, several years in silence, while right now, I think, call me crazy, I think the American people want there to be some justice now. People fired now. People held to account now, not 7 years from now. Now, 7 is just an arbitrary number. Again, that's what Ken Starr took. I don't know how long, but this is a complex issue. So this is the argument in favor of what General Sessions has been doing, but we didn't know it, is that he has, and he told Shannon this, I think, last night, and this is another thing that I also found out yesterday. He said, I have appointed a person outside of Washington many years in the Department of Justice to look at all the allegations that the House Judiciary Committee members sent to us, and we're conducting that investigation. So bottom line is that while Attorney General Sessions has been taking multiple hits on doing nothing, he actually has been doing a lot. And so he has appointed a person outside of Washington, which is what many people feel needs to happen. I know Jim Jordan has said that too. Get someone in the heartland, someone in the middle of the country with tons of experience who has no political animus, but just really wants to get to the truth of this. Sounds like General Sessions is ahead of us on this, and that's what he's doing. I know, you know, actually, I'm not going to go into all of that. I just want you to know there are a lot of inside things that would just bog us down in our conversation. But this other thing I want to mention, Jody Hunt, who is President Donald Trump's nominee to lead the Justice Department Civil Division, was in a nomination hearing yesterday. And he has been nominated since, October of 2017. And the hearings are just going at a snail's pace. I have said, but I will repeat, the Senate meets 2 to 2.5 days a week 2 to 2.5 days a week, your senators are actually working, at least in session. And the leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, has allowed the Democrats to demand 30 hours of debate on each nominee. You add to that the fact that Senator Cory Gardner has put a hold on Justice Department nominees, the people that General Sessions needs to do what he knows needs to be done, have been held up because Cory Gardner did not like General Sessions' remarks about Colorado's marijuana laws. And so demanding that the attorney general, you know, bow the knee before he can get these people into justice. It's not just Jody Hunt. It's also the head of the criminal, potential head of the criminal division. That's Brian Benzkowski. And he was appointed last fall, I believe it was, too. He would be in charge of the criminal division. And, of course, he's just been on hold. And so it goes. It goes and it goes and it goes. And so General Sessions has limited staff to do all of these major, major things. And remember that the employees in the department already are not his friends. They're part of the deep state. They were appointed by Barack Obama. I've told when we've talked with J. Christian Adams, former Justice Department official, Christian has written lengthy articles about the appointees that Barack Obama and Eric Holder made to the Justice Department. It is a cavalcade of frightening leftists. And before Barack Obama left office, just I think 2 weeks before, he transferred many of these people to positions where he moved them from. There are two categories. There's political appointees and career. Political serve at the pleasure of the current president. They're there to promote the current president's policies. Every president appoints, has so many political appointees in each department. And that's what many of these appointees that Barack Obama and Eric Holder did were. They were political appointees there to advance President Obama's agenda. And what President Obama did in unprecedented numbers was switch these key people to permanent career employees so that it's very, very hard to get rid of them in the Justice Department. Do you see how complicated this is? So, I mean, I think it's probably a good thing that the president has provoked Attorney General Sessions and going public on some of this stuff and, you know, making it known to the president himself what's happening. But that's kind of the behind the scenes information, just so that you'll have a better understanding. And speaking, of course, of the need for things to be made right. Just two stories that came to my attention today that I've read that I want to share with you. The FBI is just a mess. None of those people are really gone. A few have stepped aside, Andrew McCabe, but others like Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, all the names that you've known, many others that you may not be as familiar with, are still there. They're still there. And so the FBI alone has not been corrected. Christopher Wray, it seems to me, the new director, has spent his time covering the backsides of many of the people that he seems to be very close to, who served before him. I don't know what's going to happen with that, but I think nothing short of a roto-rootering of the leadership of the FBI and going down as deeply as you need to go to clean it out is going to fix this. And so let me bring this to the headlines. You know, we had that horrible school shooting. Has it been 2 weeks? You know, isn't it something? I mean, isn't it something how horrible things come and they are in our rearview mirror so quickly because other horrible things happen? Actually, I have to say this last week or so has been one of the slowest news cycles I have lived through and followed in a long time. It's been kind of a nice relief, honestly, to not have really horrible things happening that you have to cover. But there is still news. So here's the story. The FBI, there was a hearing this week, and the FBI admitted things that are even more egregious about Nicholas Cruz, the shooter in Florida. It failed to properly investigate multiple warnings about suspected Florida shooter Nicholas Cruz. We know that already, but here's more information about it. FBI Deputy Director David Bowditch outlined how agents missed multiple opportunities to intervene before the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School after several people called the Bureau's tip line to report concerns about Cruz's violent behavior and threatening comments. This is a report from BuzzFeed. You know about the YouTube blogger in Mississippi who twice alerted the FBI because Cruz had posted a video on YouTube said I'm going to be a professional school shooter. So it was a tip. Agents interviewed the tipster, conducted social media searches, but did nothing. And now they're admitting that they never contacted YouTube to ask for help. Never even bothered to find out who Nicholas Cruz was, where he lived. If they could get any information from YouTube, they didn't do that. And of course, we know that a friend of the Cruz family called the tip line in January of 2018, begging them to do something, talking about giving them details about what he had and what he was saying. And Bowditch, the guy, the FBI director, Deputy Director David Bowditch said, the FBI call taker, quote, was able to connect information about Nicholas Cruz to the September 27th tip about threatening YouTube comments. So the call taker recognized the name, remembered the September 2017 tip, talked to the supervisor about it, but they decided to do nothing. So it wasn't like it was out of the blue and it wasn't familiar. It was familiar and they still did nothing. And also the FBI did not share the information with the state or local authorities. You know, it makes me wonder if the FBI was not also infected, why would it not be, with the Eric Holder model of public schools where everything is racial. So any punishment of kids written in statistical form, if there are more black or Hispanic kids that are being punished, then it must be racism. So therefore, we have to reduce the number of arrests, criminal offenses on paper of our students, especially minority students, because we don't want to have a blot against their record. So we'll just only arrest so many, then we'll stop. We'll have a quota. You know, you just wonder if the FBI, why wouldn't they not be part of this whole mindset that, well, Nicholas Cruz, well, you know, we wouldn't want to ruin his record or anything. So we'll just kind of ignore that one. I don't know. But if schools around the country, especially the school in which Nicholas Cruz did all the shooting, were embracing that by virtue of their superintendent, who was closely connected to the Obama Education Department, Arne Duncan, and also came out of the Chicago school, which is not a good thing, trust me. Chicago is a wonderful city, but when it comes to politics, it stinks. Do I need to tell you that? So the superintendent of schools in that Florida district was from there and was implementing this Eric Holder program. They called it Promise. So I'm just wondering, the FBI was partnering in that. And then I have another story that has to do, I think, not just with the FBI, but, you know, after these mass shootings, we have lost trust. The FBI comes out immediately and says no sign of terrorism. They come out and say, what do they say? They say the shooter was had mental problems, domestic problems. They say all kinds of things. It's a pattern. And we're never quite sure. We still don't know what happened in Las Vegas. And we really don't know what happened in Florida at the nightclub Pulse. And so this article, long article written by Glenn Greenwald in The Intercept, really was interesting to me today. You know, immediately they've told us that Omar Mateen, who murdered, 49 people? In the LGBT nightclub in Orlando known as Pulse, we were told right away that it was an attack against gay people. And so that's been the narrative. Well, his wife now, Mateen's wife, is now on trial. It sounds from this article like the Orlando LGBT community is asking for blood. It sounds like now the truth is that Omar Mateen was searching, we now know from his searching history, was searching other places like Disney World and asking questions about where people would be most upset. And then just a few hours before the attack, he Googled Orlando nightclubs. He wasn't looking for LGBT nightclubs. He chose between two. He went to the first one. He saw that there were armed guards, and gee, that might be dangerous. So he went to Pulse, where there weren't little to no security. And that's the one he chose. And there are other reasons now why we know that it had nothing to do with targeting the LGBT community. Why is that important? Because that's a politically correct narrative. Now, if it's true, it's terrible. But if it isn't true, we don't need to be building things on lies. It turns out that Omar Mateen was an Islamist. Islamic State. He was killing on behalf of Allah. And so, nothing. But the FBI is happy to redirect your thinking on that and to say that it's because he was trying to kill LGBT persons in that nightclub. I'll be back after this. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Since 1977, the American Family Association has been a voice to remind America that the blessings of our nation have come from God's gracious hand as we've trusted Him. We thank God for His grace, empowering us for 40 years of service. As we worship Him for that, our heart's cry is for our Lord to grace us to be His vessels for the next 40 years.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is Tim Armstrong from the Worthy Walk radio program, inviting you to join us as we study the scriptures verse by verse each day, Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time here on American Family Radio. We will study the Word of God and learn to apply its truths to our lives each day. The Worthy Walk, Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio.
Women and men alike find themselves in despair after an abortion. Every woman who had an abortion was for a short time a mother, every man a father. But afterwards, they're all people in pain, anger, sadness, relationship problems. These often accompany an abortion. But there is hope. Call 866-482-LIFE. Your call is confidential, and you'll be talking with someone who has already been where you are and found the way out. 866-482-LIFE.
Are you a responsible person who finds yourself growing deeper and deeper in credit card debt and you're not sure how to fix the problem? Then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity Debt Management is a nonprofit organization that will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment. Put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges and reduce your interest rates by as much as 60%. You'll save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. It's not a loan. It's a smart way to relieve your stress, meet your obligations, and preserve your self-respect. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Gather up your bills and call this toll-free number for a free, no-obligation debt analysis. 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813. If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump will convene today another of his trademark White House listening sessions. This one is aimed at exposing a long-neglected but obviously contributing factor to gun violence among America's youth. For far too long, debates about what to do about guns, usually precipitated by some horrific mass shooting by psychopathic individuals, have given a pass to those who make billions of dollars desensitizing young people to or otherwise normalizing such murderous behavior. Insult is added to injury when prime movers behind such cultural conditioning as actor George Clooney step forward to demand new and even unconstitutional controls on firearms. If, as is his wont, the president allows the rest of us to listen in today, we better hear what might be called the gun violence industry acknowledge that it's part of our present problem and must be part of the solution. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
President Trump promoted his plans to impose punitive tariffs on aluminum and steel today, tweeting that in the last 25 years, America has lost more than 55,000 factories, 6 million manufacturing jobs, and accumulated trade deficits of more than $12 trillion. But in the face of retaliation from America's closest trading partners, Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said there could be some carve-outs.
There are potential carve-outs for Mexico and Canada based on national security and possibly other countries as well.
The pronouncement was a sharp about-face for the president, who on Friday tweeted, tariffs on steel and aluminum will only come off if new and fair NAFTA agreement is signed. And it happened as first son-in-law Jared Kushner led a delegation to meet with Mexico's president today about NAFTA, a trip he was able to make despite his degraded security clearance. The European Union has threatened to hit President Trump politically if he imposes tariffs. The EU says it will strike back with tariffs against U.S. goods like bed linens, chewing tobacco, motorcycles, cranberries, and orange juice, all produced in swing states the president won.
Who's going to hit him where it hurts? Is he prepared to take the hit?
The president is prepared to protect our country. That is the number one priority he has as president, is to protect our economic and national security interests.
President Trump also alternately played good cop, bad cop with China in a tweet taking aim at China's legacy of bootlegging, warning the U.S. is acting swiftly on intellectual property theft. We cannot allow this to happen as it has for many years. But at the same time, he revealed a plan to help level the playing field on trade, tweeting, China has been asked to develop a plan for the year of a $1 billion reduction in their massive trade deficit with the United States.
All right, that was part of John Roberts' report yesterday on Special Report. Sandy Rios back with you. All right, a couple of things about that, a couple of big things about that. The Chinese. Where to start with the Chinese? You know, they've been stealing our intellectual property for decades, a couple of decades, and they were given a lot of it during the Clinton era. I'll never forget that. They gave our secrets up. That was part of one of the many scandals in the Clinton years. And so, and then executives and companies started this whole process of exporting our technology. I just talked to an IBM executive, former IBM executive, this last week about how she would be training people in other countries about the most sensitive kinds of information and wondering herself, why am I doing this? But the company wanted her to. So China, of course, on the backs of our intellectual property, our military hardware, that they've stolen technology, developing their own, building up their military, beefing up their economy courtesy of our unfair trade practices. China has become a force to be reckoned with. And the CIA, just this week, has issued a classified report talking about China's far-reaching foreign influence operations campaign in the United States. And part of it centers on college campuses. They are beginning what they call Confucius Institutes. These have been going on for a while, but they're using them to propagandize American schools, colleges, and universities. They're also putting Chinese associations, student associations on campuses to watch Chinese students. It is a remarkable story. And by the way, we will talk tomorrow at great length about it. Rochelle Peterson of the National Association of Scholars has done great work on this. And Gordon Chang, who, of course, is himself ethnically Chinese and spent 20 years living and working in China, will be my guest. So you'll want to tune in for that, I think. But on the business of the tariffs, I want to talk to you about that for a second. You know, I talk to you about a lot of things, and I really am very careful to tell you, I try never to talk about things I don't know anything about. And if I don't know much about it, I try to tell you because I want you to be able to trust me when I do specifically and adamantly report different things to you, because I'm very careful about that. So like, I don't talk about sports. I don't talk about dogs, because trust me, I don't know anything about, hardly anything to talk. I don't even have the vocabulary to talk about it. So when it comes to trade, I'm in that category. I don't, when it comes to economics and trade, I only have common sense. I don't have any expertise, and I haven't made it an area of expertise, even as a layperson. But let me just say this. My own father was a businessman, so we grew up talking business at our table. Through the years, I have some really good friends who have very successful companies, many of them international, And so, and because of my history interviewing various people from all kinds of stripes, I understand that free trade has become like the holy grail for capitalism. At least it's been sort of put in the same category. And I've always thought, just again with my common sense, I've thought, I don't understand this. I'm not sure about this. When you open the borders with Mexico and the ones with Canada, which is what George Bush Sr. wanted to do, and you erase the lines, the country boundaries, and you start just allowing what they call free trade, it has consequences. And I didn't think it was a good idea then, and now I'm saying I don't think it's a good idea now. My husband and I enjoy driving from Washington, D.C. to Chicago. It's a long drive. It's 12 hours because that's our hometown, and we have so many friends there. But we noticed right after Barack Obama was elected that we began to see signs of decay in the inner part of our nation. At first, it was car dealerships. Remember when President Obama closed down the car dealerships? That was stunning. That was bizarre. I don't even know why we allowed that, but we did. And then we saw factories. Of course, this started under earlier. The steel industries and all the other manufacturing things that we were so known for, whether it was washing machines or whatever. In the central part of America, there was tremendous industry. Also, you know, in the Northeast also. So you began to see these big buildings shut down and empty parking lots, and we would stop at restaurants and people were looking unhealthy. Honestly, you could see with your eyes the depression, maybe health problems, empty restaurants, just poverty. And it really, I have to say, it bothered us so much. It was very hard to watch. And so that's really, you know, the result of free trade has been that America's interests have been neglected. It's just true. While people who own businesses, who do business internationally, have thrived and their businesses have, you know, the bottom lines have extended. And I know some of them, many of them are very generous with their employees, and that's good. But we have seen sort of an axe taken to American industry, and that's dangerous for the national security of this country. Could I just say, if we can't produce our own steel and aluminum, we can't really, if we go to war, we have no capacity because we're not going to have access to cheap aluminum and cheap steel from other countries if something happens and we get in a major conflict. So there are lots of reasons why we need to protect ourselves. I realize this is anathema to many Republicans, to many business people, and I apologize for that, but that is my gut feeling about it, based on, you know, just common sense, but not really knowledge about economics. I want to point to you a couple of things that, and I could be wrong. If I'm wrong about this, I'll be the first to tell you, but it is my feeling that this is probably a course correction that's needed. And I saw yesterday an article, U.S. Steel has already hired 500 workers in Illinois. U.S. Steel was devastated over this past many years. I believe it's Indiana where I saw a companion article that aluminum plant, I'm not sure what the moniker is, they're hiring hundreds of workers there to go back to work and work on aluminum. I want to share with you some off-the-record remarks from someone who actually does know more about the economy or economics than I do. And I want to read to you his thoughts, which they kind of parallel mine. Sometimes facts don't fit nicely into so-called free market rhetoric, because the rhetoric assumes that everyone else is playing by the same rules. I defend the decision that the president made to increase tariffs because our current steel industry is running below capacity needed to be profitable due to foreign dumping into our country. Foreign dumping means like China and others just selling their steel to us below the price it costs them, and their government absorbing that, and that undercuts our market. It's like dumping. You can understand that. If someone just came to the store and gave away candy bars, then the people that actually manufactured them could not put a price on them, and they can't afford to sell them anymore. So that's what China's been doing with our steel. The short-term economic price benefit of the abundant steel will be lost if we become dependent upon these same foreign actors without the capacity to produce our own. Since dumping, by definition, is a violation of the agreed-upon trade rules, no one who supports these trade agreements can complain. When the Trump administration enforces treaties, that were pushed through under the guise of engaging in reciprocal and free trade. In fact, it is intellectually dishonest to forget about the enforcement mechanisms and the reciprocal component of trade. What's more, to make a case that tariffs are automatically bad ends one of the key capacities to enforce said deals. And by the way, my bet is that most steel dumping is being done through South Korea, which is a net importer of Chinese steel and a net exporter of steel to the U.S. I just heard actually, what person was this? Someone talking, someone in the railroad industry in a private conversation told me recently, an executive, that China is doing a sleight of hand. I believe this is on steel, hiding, like we have this embargo against North Korea, and that China is actually working with Iran to sort of do a change on the labels and get around our embargo of North Korea. So you can see that things are not fair. They are not fair. The agreements we've entered into, like with China and other countries, have not resulted in anything good for us. They've built up China's economy, built up their warfare machine, and now they're coming back to infiltrate our colleges and universities. It is, and our grade schools, too. There are Confucius Institutes in the grade schools. Be sure and stay tuned tomorrow for more of an expose on that. All right, so that's the story on that. I have one other thing I want to... That's my thoughts on that. Those are my thoughts. Dan Celia is our financial expert, so listen to Dan. He may have a completely different view on that, but that's my observation, at least at this point. On the Texas primary, which took place yesterday, I want to share a few remarks from Daniel Horowitz, because Daniel follows these things so carefully, and I trust his judgment. He says Democrats did outperform their showing in recent years, and clearly, their high level of engagement will hurt Republicans in states that are genuinely more competitive. But there are no signs that Texas is going to flip anytime soon. In other words, Republicans actually came out in Texas in really good numbers yesterday, Tuesday. Thank you, Texans. Honestly, thank you for taking your responsibility seriously. Of course, it's not over. There are going to be lots of runoffs. I think it's May 22nd. You know we'll be covering that. Ted Cruz had an excellent night. Some have been saying he's in trouble, but he got 85% of the vote in the Republican primary, and it was over a million voters. I don't know the number, 1.3 million. John Cornyn only got 781,000 in 2014. And so just kind of gives you an idea. Beto O'Rourke is the chief challenger for Ted Cruz. He's the Democratic candidate, and he raised huge amounts of money, but he actually did not show that well. So overall turn up is was up for Democrats, but not enough to win Texas. It increased Democratic turnout 80% from 2014. That is impressive. The GOP turnout was 15% higher than it was in 2014. So that's pretty impressive. So the split of the votes in Texas last Tuesday was 60 to 40 GOP. So that's just some insight. Then also, Chip Roy won his district, his District 21, with 27.1%, about twice the number of his runoff opponent, who is Matt McCall. And that was with 18 people in the race. So that'll be an interesting runoff in May. Democratic voters, as a trend across Texas, bucked the establishment Democrats and actually backed some Bernie Sanders-style candidates, which is interesting, and I'm sure that'll be a national trend. The analysis by Daniel is that Democrats will have an uphill battle to flip House seats in Texas. But of course, it's a process. It's the long road. It's the long view of things. The left is marching through Texas, trying to turn it blue. And of course, they had impressive numbers come out. They have more work to do. But this doesn't mean that conservatives will not be in trouble in states that are not as strongly red as Texas. So as we talk about these primaries, I think the next one is Tuesday in New Mexico, about which I really almost nothing to say. New Mexico's like, is that a state? We never hear about it. I'm kidding. I know it's a state, and I will say something about it when I have more information. But that's what happened in Texas on Tuesday, just a further update. All right, listen, thank you so much for listening, and don't forget to stay tuned tomorrow for that expose on what China is doing on perhaps your child or your son or daughter's college campus or school. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.